So questions that I have that maybe you guys have as well, as we're starting off this lesson, which is chapter 3 of the book Spiritual Warfare. And that's the book I was telling you about. We have a few copies left over there under the clock. But the book Spiritual Warfare, chapter 3. Let's go ahead and get into this a little bit. It's week 4, but it's chapter 3. Week 4, we have come to the point in our study, and we're studying through Ephesians 6, 10 through 20, the passage about spiritual warfare. So we've come to the point where in our study, we're working our way through, and we're at the point where it says the schemes of the devil, knowing our enemy. That's going to be our lesson this morning, the schemes of the devil, knowing our enemy. That sounds sinister and dark, and I didn't really like studying it, to be honest with you, and we don't want to give the devil glory or attention, but the Apostle Paul does say that we cannot be ignorant of the devil's schemes, right? So a big part of our warfare is not being ignorant. And we're told to put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand. That's what we talked about last week, putting on spiritual armor. And we're going to go through piece by piece coming up in some of our future studies. But put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the devil's schemes. We put that little graphic up there about what was Paul thinking about when he was thinking about armor. Well, the guy on the left is who Paul was thinking about, right? He probably spent way too much time chained up to one of those guys when he was on house arrest or he was in prison or just walking the streets. That's what Paul saw. So when he's thinking about armor, he's thinking about that guy. He's thinking about, okay, how's that guy protect himself? Well, how should a Christian be protected? Our enemy is real. So Paul used that. I just put this one up here on the right because that's what we think about probably, right? When we think about somebody having the full armor on, the helmet, the weapons, the jacket, the protection for the chest area, all of that. So that was something that we did talk about last week, and we will continue to refer to this as well, just that spiritual armor. So let's just take a look at our passage for this morning. We're going to start at the beginning, and we're going to end the schemes of the devil. But it says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. That's our passage. 2 Corinthians reinforces that. 2 Corinthians 2:11 says, so that we would not be outwitted by Satan. Have you ever felt outwitted by Satan? For we are not ignorant of his designs. We're not ignorant of his schemes. So that's why we're equipping ourselves. That's why we're studying what we're studying this morning, is because we have a devil that's his desire. That's what his mission is to outwit us, cause us to fall, cause us to fail, cause us to go into thought patterns that are unhealthy. But we're told we don't need to be ignorant of that. We don't need to just be his prey, right? So that's what our study is going to be. But who is the devil? Could anyone describe what the devil looks like? A fallen angel, you're right. Here's some artwork over the centuries, right? Just some of the artwork of people that have tried to say, oh, I think this is probably what the devil looks like. All right? I'm not saying that's the devil. I can't tell you what he looks like. Is there anyone here that could raise their hand and say, I know what the devil looks like? The Bible doesn't necessarily tell us what he looks like right now. It does just some artwork, right? The one in the middle, I'm trying to figure that one out, but I'm thinking that might be the Antichrist or something. I don't know. That's just artwork throughout the different time periods. But what's interesting is I wasn't brought up in a Christian home. We didn't go to church. We didn't read the Bible. We didn't do any of that. But you know what I read when I was a kid? I read Hot Stuff. Anyone remember that comic strip? Hot Stuff, right? So sometimes you just think of the devil as just kind of a cute guy with a pitchfork and some horns on his head. And as a kid, it's kind of amazing. I look back now and I'm ashamed of it. But man, those comics that we read, Hot Stuff, Casper the Ghost, Wendy the Witch, what were they trying to teach us as kids, right? So some people think, oh, the devil's just this cute little guy with a pitchfork. I heard it said before also that, you know what, a lot of times we think of this when we think of the devil, and who knows, could look like that. Pretty sure he doesn't look like that. Could he look like that? You guys know the T-Mobile guy? I'm not saying he's the devil. I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes is the devil, right? You guys are like, wow, wait, I shouldn't watch that commercial. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I've heard it described sometimes that we think the devil is this horrible figure that is scary and all this and that. But you know what? He could be a proper British gentleman, right? He can come across like that. And that's probably more of how he presents himself to people. Is just a tempter, somebody that can get into your life, somebody that can mix it up with you, somebody that can talk your language, somebody that can tempt you and cause you to eventually be bound. So those are just some fun, maybe just some things to kind of get us thinking about who is the devil anyway. A Barna survey, you guys all have heard of Barna surveys, right? Well, they surveyed 1,800 Christians, and I want to read to you guys how that survey went. I wonder, have you guys ever been surveyed by Barna? When I hear that, I always wonder, who are the Christians they're surveying? Has anyone ever been surveyed by Barna? Okay. But anyway, they found 1,800 Christians, and this is how the survey went. I was curious to see how it went. I'm sure you are as well. A recent Barna survey of over 1,800 self-described Christians found 4 out of 10 strongly agree that Satan is not a living being, but he's just a symbol of evil. An additional 2 out of 10 said they agree somewhat with that perspective. So in other words, 60% of Christians think that Satan is only a symbol for evil and not a real living being. And this guy says, no wonder the church is falling victim to the enemy and his deceptions. It's kind of hard to feel like we have an enemy that we need to fight against if we really don't believe that he's real, right? We just believe that he's just kind of a symbol of evil. But he is real. He is a real enemy, a real spiritual being. So the Bible has a lot to say about who the enemy is. And this was interesting. I'll share this with you. 7 books of the Old Testament reference the devil. Every writer in the New Testament mentions Satan. Every writer in the New Testament mentions Satan. 29 times mentioned in the Gospels alone. 25 of those times by Jesus. First book of the Bible, Genesis, tells of his existence. The final book of the Bible, Revelation, foretells his doom. So all throughout the Bible, prominent player, right, on the world stage right now, has been since man was first created. The enemy was there to do his work, and the enemy is still here. And I don't say that to frighten us at all, because as Christians, we don't need to be frightened of the devil, right? He's a defeated foe. So as we study who is the devil, who is the enemy, that we need to be aware of his schemes, there's a list of names throughout the Bible. And there are probably a couple that I didn't put on here. But we can learn something. It says that we learn about God based on his names, right? Who he is. If you want to know about God and his character, he reveals himself through his names. We can learn about the enemy through some of his names as well. And there are a lot of different names for the enemy. Start off with one that's probably the most popular to us, the one that's most common, and that would be Satan. The devil. Beelzebul. You ever heard of that one? The tempter. So let's just take that list, and there's going to be some more that pop in there. So who is Satan? What can we learn just from that name, Satan? Satan is a spiritual being, and this would be on your list here. If you guys have your worksheet here, it's also in your book. Your book will also be listing some of those, but your worksheet will have a list of names, and it'll have some descriptions, some definitions of those names as well. So the word Satan wasn't so much just a name. It wasn't like that was the name that the devil had, was Satan. It was more a description of who he was and what he did, right? And it could be said of probably anybody who did this, but this is what Satan has become known as now, a spiritual being who led a heavenly revolt against God and was subsequently cast down into the earth. His personal name, Satan, simply means adversary. So the name Satan means adversary, and this name indicates Satan's basic nature. He is the enemy of God, of all that God does, and of all that God loves. He's also called the devil. What does the devil mean? How is that different? The word devil means a false accuser, a slanderer. Satan plays this role, we see in Job 1 and 2, when he attacks Job's character. So let's just take a minute. You guys remember the story about Job? So when we think of Job, we think of a guy that went through suffering that none of us ever hope to ever have to go through, right? How did that all come about, though? The first couple chapters let us in on some interesting things. I encourage you guys this week to maybe go and study that. Go and study that a little bit and look and just see what exactly was going on. To summarize it, it says that when the sons of God would gather, okay, sons of God is a word used for angelic beings, the divine angelic beings, not human beings. It says when they would gather in this divine council, which we don't know a lot about. He just kind of says it like, hey, this is just what it was. This divine council that God has. And somebody asked me this week, well, why does God need counsel? God doesn't need counsel. And in fact, I think in Romans somewhere says that who are we that God would need us to counsel him at all? He doesn't need us to counsel him. It's more of a gathering of everything probably to say, because angel means messenger. So a messenger. So maybe it's this time of where God is saying, this is what my purposes are. These are my plans. This is what I want to accomplish. This is what I have going on. So God initiates this conversation with who comes into this divine council. It says the devil, Satan. Satan comes into this divine council meeting with the sons of God when they gather. And God says to Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? And then the conversation goes on about how righteous he is and how he lives to please me. And then the devil's, of course, yeah, that's because everything in his life is going well. Let me have some time with him. Let me start inflicting some things on him and see if he really praises you. And God grants that. There's a lot of things we can learn just in that story right there, right? About who's sovereign? Is it the devil? Is it Satan? Not at all, right? Does Satan have to get permission? Yeah. So who's sovereign? God is sovereign. God is the Lord of hosts. God is not one of the sons of God that gather the created beings. So as Mark, I think maybe you shouted that out earlier, Satan is a created being. And that's something for us to remember. And we're going to get into that in just a little bit. A created being who does only what God allows him to do. Okay? And for whatever reasons, we don't know all the answers why God allows him to do some of the stuff that he does. But God in his wisdom, God in his purposes does allow that. You look at what's going on in the world right now. You look what's going on in the Middle East. It's really nothing new. Jesus prophesied wars and rumors of wars. They're going to continue. They're going to be like those labor pains. Things are going to be getting closer and closer. I believe that's what we're experiencing, is maybe that closer and closer. Wars is nothing new. God, for whatever reason, uses the devil to accomplish some of God's purposes, and that could be in judgment of nations. It could be in tormenting somebody to the point where they hate their life so much that they turn to Christ. That would be my testimony. That I was left alone with myself and my thoughts and my pursuits and was so miserable that as a teenager slipped down onto my knees next to my bed and cried out to a God that I didn't know if he even existed, but something inside of me had a little bit of hope. So God used the devil in my life. It could have gone either way. Thank God he's sovereign and he called me and he saved me. So the God does allow the devil, as we see in Job, to do things, but only as God allows, right? So as we keep looking at some of the names, we look at that weird name Beelzebul. Nobody really says that much, do they? That's a weird name. But you know what it really means? Which really kind of puts Satan in his place, in proper perspective. We said God is the Lord of hosts, right? God Almighty. We can go on and on about who God is by his names. What does Beelzebul mean? Lord of the fly. Lord of the fly. A false god of the Philistines. And you can read about that in 2 Kings. So I put lots of scriptures and stuff in there too, guys. A really good study that we wouldn't have time this morning to go through all of that. But I put those verses there for you guys to dive a little deeper into some of those things. Other titles of Satan include the tempter, the wicked one, the accuser of the brethren and sisters, the ruler of this world, and the god of this age. Those are interesting ones. Prince of the power of the air, the serpent of old, the great dragon, father of lies, Belial, the wicked one. So each of those could be a study and might be a good thing to do. Just go and reference those and say, what does it say about, you know, the serpent of old? What does that mean? And the great dragon, what, that's, you know, the book of Revelation and stuff. What is that talking about? Father of lies kind of speaks for itself. But go back up to a couple of those. The ruler of this world and the god of this age. Prince of the power of the air. Have you ever asked yourself these kind of questions? Can the devil read my mind? Have you ever wondered that? You ever wondered if you're thinking something that can the devil... Can he read my thoughts? Have you ever wondered what role did Satan play in heaven before his fall? We're going to get into that a little bit. And what does it mean that he is the ruler of this world? So the ruler of this world, does that mean he's in complete control of everything right now? Yes or no? No. Does he think he is in some ways? He'd like to believe that in some ways, but I think God keeps him on a short leash. He is the ruler of those who are not under the... Let's just say this. Let's just put a blanket statement out there. God is the ruler of all, right? God is the ruler of all. Let's just be clear on that. But what about this particular realm, this age, this world, where you see titles like that? You see ruler of the world, God of this age, prince of the power of the air. Well... He has dominion. He has dominion over those who have not come under the lordship of Christ. And some of you remember what that was like, right? Being under the dominion of the enemy. But God is sovereign over all. And that's not something as a Christian that I would worry a whole lot about when you see titles like that, that he's the ruler of this world. Does that mean he gets to do whatever he wants to do? Not at all. So be comforted in that. Remember that lesson in Job. Remember a lot of these different things that we're going to study this morning as we get into this a little bit more. God is sovereign over all, and he's the devil. And I love this quote. I think Martin Luther said this. He's the devil, but he's still God's devil. Right? I love that quote. He's still God's devil. So he has a lot of power. He has a lot of things that he does to destroy people's lives. He's the father of lies. He all of those things, right? So he has power. So it's not like we should mock him and we should think that, you know, in our own strength that we are more superior than the enemy, all those kinds of things, because we're not. I think that's why the Apostle Paul started off this section by saying, finally, brothers, be what? Strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Right? So that's really where our strength comes from, is aligning ourselves, being in Christ. That's where our strength will come from. But the enemy does have craft and subtlety and trickery. He has a bag of tricks that he uses individually on people. He'll do something different in my life to tempt me than he will in your life to tempt you. And then Lucifer. Lucifer is one of those names that is maybe a little bit more popular as we think about who the enemy is. So a brief history of our adversary, the devil. I like this quote that I heard too. He is not God's opposite equal, right? You don't think of God and the devil And they're just opposite equals. One is all powerful, but he's all good. And then the devil, he's all powerful too. But no, he's not. He's not God's opposite equal at all. And we ask the question, you think the devil can read your mind? Well, no, he can't. He's not omniscient. He's not omnipotent. And he's not omnipresent. You say, well, what do those words mean? I'm not sure exactly what that means. Well, he's not omniscient. He doesn't know everything. He's not reading your mind. He doesn't have that power, right? Omnipotent. He's not all powerful like God is. He's not omnipresent. Do you think the devil, Satan himself, can be doing something in Europe and doing something personally right here in Watertown? No, he's not omnipresent. Sometimes we give him a little bit too much credit than he deserves, right? I heard a guy talking, and he was talking about how a lot of times we use the phrases, I'm fighting Satan, as though we're fighting Satan himself. We're going to be taking Satan on one-on-one. And he's like, you're not fighting Satan anymore. Then he says the boys back in World War II would talk about going to Europe, and we're going to fight Hitler. They would never see Hitler. But it was just that idea that we're fighting against that regime. We're fighting against that power. Satan probably is not the one that you fight individually. You fight demonic powers. You fight the ones that he controls. And it could be that you go one-on-one with Satan sometimes. I'd be surprised. But you do definitely have an enemy. Satan is in control of the demonic world, and he has all of his demons and the principalities and powers. And those are the ones that are out tempting you and I, and we know what that is like. So he's not God's opposite equal. He's not omniscient. He's not omnipotent, nor omnipresent. So how did he come into being anyway? First, and we have on this list here, if you guys have this list, we're just going to have a bullet points of who he is. He is a created spirit being, and that's important for us to know. He was created. You and I were created human beings. Lucifer was created as a spirit being, and we have passages in Isaiah and Ezekiel. They're super important to study. You guys should probably spend some time this week. It'd be really, I think, insightful to study some of these, but I listed them here. We'll read them. Isaiah 14 says, how you are fallen from heaven, describing Lucifer. How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you are brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit. And then in Ezekiel 28, it says, moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, the prophet Ezekiel speaking. He says, son of man, raise a lamentation over the king of Sire and say to him, thus says the Lord God. You say, well, wait a second, is this about the devil or is this about the king of Sire? Both. You are the signet of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. They say Lucifer's role in heaven, beautiful, created angelic being. I've heard that leading worship, directing the worship in heaven, a powerful, maybe one of the most powerful of God's created angels was Lucifer. You're the signet of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. Sardius, topaz and diamond, beryl, onyx and jasper, sapphire, emerald, and that one that we all know, it looks like carbuncle, right? I don't know what carbuncle is, but it must be beautiful. And crafted in gold were your settings and your engravings. On the day that you were created, they were prepared. You were an anointed guardian cherub. Well, you can see this isn't just about the king of Tyre, right? He's not a divine being. So what happens, guys, just to help us understand a little bit, sometimes in the Bible, you see dual prophecies, right? You see things that are written that seem to apply to that exact moment, but there's a far bigger picture, far bigger meaning for why that prophet is speaking what he's speaking, why it's being written into Holy Scripture. Because King of Sire isn't somebody we deal with. Fallen angel is. So on that day that you were created, they were prepared. You were an anointed cherub, guardian cherub. I placed you. You were on the holy mountain of God in the midst of the stones of fire. You walked. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till unrighteousness was found in you. In the abundance of your trade, you were filled with violence in your midst, and you sinned. So I cast you as a profane thing from the mountain of God. And I destroyed you, O guardian cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was proud because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I exposed you before kings to feast their eyes on you. By the multitude of your iniquities and the unrighteousness of your trade, you profaned your sanctuary. So I brought fire out from your midst. It consumed you, and I turned you to ashes on the earth in the sight of all who saw you. And all who know you among the peoples are appalled at you. You have come to a dreadful end and shall be no more forever. So yes, that applied to the king of Tyre as well, but it also talks about how God had to remove Lucifer from his presence and humiliated him and cast him to the earth. Well, he's a fallen angel cast out of heaven by God, and we see that Jesus said this, right? In Luke 10:18, Jesus, in conversation, just said, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. So I love it when we see prophecies made in the Old Testament validated by the Son of God himself saying things. He's like backing that up, like, yep, that's exactly what happened. I saw that. In Isaiah, how you are fallen from heaven, O day star. We saw that one already, how you are cut down to the ground. You laid the nations low. When he rebelled and was cast out of heaven, you say, where'd demons come from? Why do we have so many demons that can be in Europe and can be in Asia and can be in North America and can be in Watertown? How many are there? I don't know the number exactly, but it says he took a third of all the angels with him. You say, well, how do you know that? Well, in Revelation, this is what it says. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars. Stars is a word used for angelic beings a lot of times in scriptures. He swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. So that's talking about Satan. That's talking about those angelic beings that sided with him in that rebellion and were cast out as well, a third. So that's a lot. I don't know how many exactly. It says, and the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. So everything we're talking about, and that's when we started off this class, we said we're not going to get into a lot of speculation about, well, these practices is what so-and-so on TV talks about, or I read this great book, and that's what this talks about, or back in my old church, my pastor taught us that we're supposed to be doing all this stuff. We said we're going to be heavy into the Bible. We're going to say, what does the Bible really say about all this stuff? That's what we're building this foundation of. Who is the enemy? What are his schemes? We're going to talk a lot this morning about who he is. Next week, we're going to talk more about what he does. So this is who he is. He tempted our first parents in the garden to rebel against God and brought sin and separation from God to the human race. And we know that story, so we're not going to spend a lot of time in there. But you remember, if you read in Genesis 3, how the serpent was there. When God created human beings, these angelic beings he created, when he decided to create human beings, image bearers of him, that would show his glory, that would walk with him in relationship, the same way that these sons of God, these good angels, were in relationship with him, worshiping him, honoring him. When God created human beings, that was his heart's desire, to have that same relationship with them. Well, Satan, being perverted and wicked, had other desires, and he was going to do whatever he could to try to pull human beings over to his side, like he had pulled a third of the angels, right? And it worked. He found a way. He found a way to tempt Eve. And this is the story. Eat of the fruit of the trees. She said, but God said, you should not eat of the fruit. And well, serpent said, you shall, will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God. So we can see in this, and I encourage you guys, all these scriptures that we're giving you guys, lots of stuff, man, if you're like, yeah, my devotion time's been a little dry lately. I'm not sure what to read. You got a lot of stuff you can read this week, right? A lot of things we can be poring over. Looking at this as well, just seeing the nature of how he tempts. He doesn't try to tempt Eve with something bad in his, you know, that she would think is a bad thing. She would think that, well, to not die, that's a good thing. And that our eyes could be opened, that's a good thing. And that maybe knowing good and evil like God, that maybe is a good thing. Forgetting that God said, don't do it. Period. God just said, just don't do it. Just don't go there. The enemy will get in and start making it. And that's how he works with you and me as well, right? And you guys know that. You know that's been your experience as well, to where something that might be tempting to you, you can justify as that's not a bad thing. That's really okay, isn't it? That's how the devil works. So there's lots of stuff in these passages that we can see. And then we saw man fell, and we see in Romans 5:12, Apostle Paul picks up on that and says, therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned. So it was a big deal. Big deal what happened in the garden. But it doesn't show that the enemy won, right? The devil didn't win. You and I are here saved by the power of God, power of Christ, to show that God is victorious in our lives. And always keep that in mind as you read things like this, because this can get kind of like, wow, enemy just gets to do whatever he wants, and he just has such power. Just remember, God is sovereign over all. So he is currently, and this is what we need to remember, he is currently an overthrown ruler of this world. He is a defeated prince of the power of the air. He is a false god of this age. There's scriptures there. And then John says, now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. Ephesians 2:2, in which you once walked, talking about all those bad things we used to do, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience. So you say, well, what power does he have? He has a lot of power over the sons of disobedience. He had a lot of power over you before you came to Christ, right? He has a lot of power over those who are refusing to come to Christ, those who still want to walk after their own wisdom, their own strength, their own ways, and reject God, called sons of disobedience. And he said, that's how we used to be. We're not that way anymore, thank God. But that's what it means, the influence that he has, that they follow the course of this world. So the enemy, as the prince of the power of the air, the god of this age, the god of this world, when you hear terms like that, a world system that leaves God out of it, the true God out of it. There's a lot of world systems that throw gods into it, little g's, lots of religious systems. That's how the enemy works. That's how the devil has power and has control. This world system, it's a system that wants to operate separate from God's truth that he's revealed in his word. 2 Corinthians 4:4, in their case, the god of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers, to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. So that's another thing he is able to do with unbelievers. And then in Revelation, he rules over the realm of darkness until Jesus casts him into the lake of fire forever. This is good news. This is how I kind of wanted to end this section this morning, is saying that he doesn't get to do what he wants to do forever and ever and ever. He's the devil. He's God's devil. He does what God allows him to do for God's purposes. But in Revelation, it says, God threw him into the pit, speaking of God, God threw him into the pit and shut it and sealed it over him so that he might not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be released for a little while. Okay? So that's talking about millennial reign of Christ, talking about how the enemy is going to be put into a pit for a temporary time. And then, and the devil, who had deceived them, will be thrown and was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night, not to be let out again, not a temporary thing, but forever and ever. Amen? Is that good news? I'm happy about that. I'm very happy about that, to see God's sovereign control, power, when it's time, when God knows it's the best time, when he wraps it all up, the devil is done. But for right now, he's not done. He's defeated at the cross, defeated against the blood of Christ over us. He does not have power in our lives as Christians. And we're told to stand against him, because it doesn't mean he's not going to try. Doesn't mean he's not going to try to tempt you to come and to get you to buy into this world system, to do things that dishonor God. He's going to always be trying that. That's why we need to have the full armor of God to be able to stand. And we'll talk about that as we go forward a little bit more. So what I'd like to do now, guys, is we have on this sheet here, we have five questions. So at your tables, I'd like for you guys to just think about what we've talked about. There's the questions up there on the board as well. And then just go ahead and spend the remaining time that we have just at your tables just talking about that. And if you had questions and maybe can't answer that question, write it out on that piece of paper, put it in that box, and we'll get together for a question and answer time a little later.